Right, absolutely delighted to welcome to the show, and I'm going to, once again, it's all these names I've got to try and pronounce today, Anton Popochnik, let's see if I got that right. Good evening, Anton.
Good evening, Kenny. Good to talk to you.
How did I do it there? Popochnik, how did I do that?
Popochnik, it's great, it's quite okay.
That wasn't bad. I'm going to stick with Anton tonight, if you don't mind.
Good.
How are you doing, Anton? Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, really great, really great. I'm happy to talk to you too.
Thanks very much. Now, before we go any further, I've looked this up and converted the website, of course, into English, and it comes out as Team Freedom. But when you first look on the site, tell me the pronunciation there. Is it Team Freiheit?
Yes, it's Team Freiheit, but Team Freedom is also okay. It's the English term.
Yes, okay. Well, for anybody who wants to go onto the site, they've only got to go into Google and go Team Freedom, and it'll come up. Now, I'm fascinated by what it is. So let's start with you first. Well, let's talk about Team Freedom first. What exactly is Team Freedom, and when did it begin?
Team Freedom is a humanistic, non-governmental organization seated here in Austria, and we began 8 years ago. We began because it was to start the talk of membership talks with Turkey. And at that time, there was this question, because with Turkey, we had another value system, Islamic value system. And then there was the question, what are our European values? And at that time, we discovered no one really knew, so had a simple definition of that.
Okay, when you say values, what exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about ethics? Are we talking about morals? Are we talking about direction for the whole of Europe? What are we thinking here?
Yeah, with values, you can talk about a lot of things, but we especially talk about what makes a free society like ours here in Europe.
Okay.
What are these development steps to lead to a free society?
Now, what exactly are you? It says you're a voluntary humanitarian organization. So how are you funded, for example?
Yes, so we are humanists, and we are funded like we have members who pay a monthly fee. And yes, for me, for example, you know, we, yeah.
So you're sharing information and thoughts like a think tank kind of society.
Yes. Okay. And we go to schools. We make lectures in schools. We make public lectures. We created an online game for young people to share these values and it's fun to learn about this.
So you're like a little club.
A what?
Like a club.
A club? No, we are association.
Association, yeah. So you join, you all pay into it, you share, you have a website. Yes. What do you do actively? Do you attend places? Do you complain, criticize, write to people? Are you involved?
Yes. Now we are like in the. We wrote a book called The Hidden Blueprint of Freedom. We go to schools. Now I had a 3-week tour to Germany. Make a public lectures, try to raise public awareness, to create some groups that they can be active. Now we are working on a big online community to like engage people to do something.
Okay, well that's actually, we'll come to the book in a minute because that's fascinating as well. But I wanted to ask what your actual goals are. That you kind of touched on that there. What is it that Team Freedom wants to achieve? What do you want to happen?
Yes, we want to raise this public awareness that the people know their values, the developments, and they also know that if they do nothing, they will lose it again. There's a nice quote that if you sleep in a democracy, you will wake up under dictatorship. And there's one thing we as normal citizens always forget. We think we have these freedoms and they will be there forever. But every freedom we have means for another group, they have less power, less influence, less money. And if we stop actively engaging, they change the system for their benefits.
Yes, you say, you follow on from there, sleeping with a democracy means waking up under a dictatorship. Now, I mean, are you referring to a federal Europe? Do you see that becoming a dictatorship?
Dictatorship is too much, but we really, with the European Union, we already lost a lot of our democratic self-determination. For example, if you look at how democracy works on a national level, you have an election, you vote for a parliament, there comes a government, they make some laws, and in the end of the cycle, the next election, we look what have the politicians done, and if we don't like it, if it goes in the wrong direction, we can vote for the opposition and change the government. And when we look how the system works on a European level, then it's a different thing, because there we also vote for the European Parliament. But the big difference is the European Parliament is somehow powerless, because the European government comes not out of this parliament directly. There's the European government is the European Commission. These guys get appointed, are not voted directly, and the council.
Yes. So let me make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying that individually in democratic countries, say like the UK or Spain, for example, we elect our leaders, but once they go to be heads in Europe, we lose that ability to elect them. They're being put forward by themselves, effectively.
Yeah, the thing is, we have less, less power there.
Less power, less say in who gets to make decisions for us, yeah?
If they make a decision, we do not agree, what can you do on this European level? To, you know, for example, we have now these laws, these anti-terror laws concerning this massive storage of data. In Austria, of the 1st of April, we have this directive from the European Union. So now for a half a year, every phone call you make, to whom you make it, which internet site, my location, all of this is stored for half a year. And if we don't like it, and the European Parliament not even have the power to give in a new proposal for a law. Every national government has this power, but the European doesn't have it.
Okay, so what is it that you'd like us to see? What is it? I mean, first of all, this system, you're talking about the European system. You're obviously concerned that Europe is going to be making, as if they're not already, but they're going to be making too many rules for us. You'd like to see that reduced and go back to national level?
This is the question. I think it would be good if we have a real direct democratic tool on this European level. So if we as a civil society collect with a petition a special kind of signatures, then there has to be the European public has to be asked for a special law. I have not the same the right term in English now, but you understood it?
Yes. I think we're on the same lines. We know where we're going for. So the bottom line is, at the moment, we have this situation where Europe is growing into one government and is beginning to impose its laws on the rest of the European Union. But it's not being elected by the individuals that are living in Europe, because they're only electing their own governments, and the European seat of power is overriding a lot of those nations' rules and laws.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
But also, we as citizens have less powers. That means other groups have more power, like economic groups.
Yes.
We saw this ACTA, you know, it's like a law for the economy. And then now we have with this, there's a lot of laws now that came out, like with this Monsanto thing, you know, that you are not allowed to plant some seeds in your own garden anymore. They tried to push this through, and it was a big public outrage on this, and there are a lot of things that you see it's not for our benefit, but the benefit for some big corporations, and that's also worrying.
Yes, the Monsanto thing is something that we deal with quite regularly. We seem to go back to it every now and then, and I'm beginning to think that what these companies do is just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Eventually, they think that one day someone won't be holding the door open, and they go through another corridor. It seems to be a process that they are prepared to play a slow waiting game. So it's dangerous, as you rightly say. We have to stand up against it. Now, you mentioned on the website, you say you'd like to see basic rights for everyone. Well, forgive me, obviously, I'm going to be a bit naive here, but I thought that was the case. So what are the exceptions that you're talking about?
I think we have basic rights for everyone. What have you read? So?
Well, your website says that you'd like to see basic rights for everyone. As I say, that is the case, isn't it?
No, it is the case. It is the case.
Okay.
So maybe you misunderstood something. So we in Europe, we have basic rights for everyone. But, you know, we are now on a process to diminish all these rights.
Oh, okay. You're saying that you want to see the basic rights for everyone maintained. You don't want to see them lost. Okay, okay. Because you say also, if we don't stand up for our freedoms and our civil rights, then we will lose them. So what things in particular do you think we should be standing up and fighting against right now? What is it you're working on at Team Freedom?
For example, this democratic shortcomings in the European Union, they are a big problem. And if you compare it with history, it's also, when we fight for freedoms, it's an active process. And when we lose it, it's only being passive. And the first thing is the system gets changed, so the political elite gets more power that we already have in Brussels. And the next thing is there's a threat from inside or outside, and the political elite use this threat to also cut away our civil liberties. And nowadays this threat is terrorism, and there are already a lot of terrorism laws with all this data preservation, all of this. And then there's also a big thing that another strong value system, they get a lot of kids and also slowly change the system. And now in antiquity, it was like the Christians, they get a lot of kids because they were in the Roman Empire, they were many slaves, they get a lot of kids. And at some point, they become a political power. And yes, and then we had, you know, now Europe is Christianized, and we had 1,000 years of the Middle Ages. And now we have another strong group in Europe. They get a lot of kids, and it's the Muslims.
Yes, okay. Well, once again, this is something we've been dealing with quite a lot recently, and someone was bringing us figures saying the difference between having two children to five children per individual means it's only a question of time before we have a Muslim Europe.
Mm-hmm. But what is the solution for this example, you know? And for us, we are working with really a great group of liberal Muslims in Europe, and they're called Initiative Liberale Muslime Österreichs, so Initiative for Liberal Muslims in Austria. And so what's the solution for this problem? And when you think how Christianity changed from the Middle Ages to this now modern liberal Christianity in our countries, and we show up six development steps. Shall I go shortly through them?
Yes, why not? Let's do that now. That's a good idea. Yes, please, let's hear them.
Okay, how the Middle Ages ended. First, it was the Renaissance, so the rebirth of this antique humanistic thinking. And I will also say that means for a religion that also the development and happiness for the people here, right and now, is important. And then we came to rationality. And for us right now, this means that all this religious text we see in a historical context. And we put reason above faith. Then with the age of enlightenment, the important thing was the separation of state and church. And then only if we separate state and church, man-made systems like rule of law and democracy can function. And then the crown of all these things are human rights. And so for us, this is the framework every religion in Europe has to obey. So that also the happiness of the people here right now is important. You see the text in a historical context. You separate state and religion. Then secular law is superior to religious law. Democracy means in this context you can change your religion freely, and the human rights, they're like a framework every religion now has to accept. And if there are some points in this religious text they do not agree with or do not are not in accordance with our human rights, then you see it in this religious context. You see it in the historical context. I'm sorry.
Okay, now I understand the steps and I understand how we've changed, but one of the things that's different in the situation with the Muslim, the Islamization, if you like, of what's going on is, of course, Sharia law. Now, the problem that we had and the problem that we've had in the interviews that we've had is that many Muslims have said, we're sorry, but if you are unbelievers, then our law goes above your law. It goes above the law of the land, even. Well, that can't happen, can it?
You know, the radicals, the Islamists, they have the totally opposite of the six steps. They want total submission under God's will. Faith is superior to reason. Politics and religion are not separated. Islamic law is superior to secular law. There's only one religion, and there are no human rights. Men are superior to women. Death penalty for homosexuality, adultery, and all these things, you know. But the thing is, for our culture, if we know our values and we say everyone is welcome to believe what they want, but this is the framework. And for example, the freedom of religion is part of the human rights. And if the human rights, it's a good concept, because it says your freedom ends where my freedom starts. So in this context, you're not allowed to use this freedom of religion to suppress other freedoms like equality of women and men or freedom of opinion or whatever.
Yes, one of the, I don't know if you're aware of a group called the English Defence League, but we had the leader of the English Defence League on, we did a series of interviews with Muslims, with the English Defence League, with the head of the Temple Church in London. We tried to talk to a whole range of people coming from different angles of this, and whilst the head of the English Defence League was probably saying the most provocative things, he was also the person that I got the most emails from with people agreeing with him. So it's interesting that people, we seem to be in a situation where people don't want to speak up for something anymore. They're scared to speak up for it, even if they agree with it. Is that something you find yourself?
Yes. In Austria and Germany, especially because of our history, it's even more difficult to speak with this, because they immediately try to put you on this right corner. And for us in Austria, it's this nice situation because we work with this real great group of liberal Muslims, and they are real good people, you know. They are really, because, for example, how's the situation in Austria? In Austria, Islam is an official religion. We have Islamic teachings in the school, and there was a study, a survey some years ago, and it came out as 23% of Islamic Muslim teachers in our school are against democracy. So,
yes, that's slightly worrying, isn't it? It's not something I feel I can play, but somebody sent me a YouTube, which was somebody going to Luton in the middle of a march and trying to talk to some of the Muslim marchers and she was dressed very, very conservatively. She wasn't sort of, you know, badly dressed. She wasn't particularly uncovered. And they were shouting at her, who was she trying to seduce, telling her to go away and dress properly, you know, telling her to cover her face. This is in Luton, in Hertfordshire, in London, you know, in England. It's a... and saying that she couldn't go to heaven because she wasn't a believer, and I mean, there's thousands and thousands of people marching, and these people are scared of losing the traditions and the of their own nation. Their nation is changing before their very eyes. Is that fair, or do we have to sometimes just accept change as we did 1,000 years ago?
For me, I think. We have to stand up for our values, and they are real great values. You know, these humanistic ideas that everyone gets all these rights, human rights, they are real precious things. And the important thing is, if there will come a clash in some years, then the right wing will get all the votes, and then they will impose some real strict laws, and we will lose human rights also. And it's also a big problem, you know.
Yes, we could lose them a lot worse than we think, couldn't we? If we go the route that we're talking about here, let's change. We don't have too much longer left. Let's go over to your book. Let's have a look at this book. I've just noticed that I'm assuming these are you're both the authors. Is this your elder brother?
Yes, my elder brother.
Ah, so it's
Thomas
Petrosian.
He's like the mastermind behind this book.
Ah, so tell us. So tell us a little bit more about the book.
The book is. Which developments lead to these three societies, in detail, the history also, and what are the problems right now? And it's really like when you wrote the book, then you know this, you know the values, and then for us it's like One of the main problems why like Islam wins is we are not standing up for our values. So the first step is we have to know our values and stand up for them. And this is also a reason for the book.
So the book, what is the book exactly doing? Is it explaining where we're at? Is it explaining what we should be doing? I mean, is it a combination of everything? What exactly is the book about?
Yes, a combination. But mainly, what are the values on a easy to understand way 2,000 years of European history brought down to 6 steps and show how it was in antiquity, how we lost it, now we have it, and now we have started, we only set back and others started already developments that we lose it again. And this is the book about.
And the book is called The Hidden Blueprint of Freedom, yes?
Yes, The Hidden Blueprint of Freedom.
If anybody wants to go and have a look at your website, they've only got to put Team Freedom in, but there are a few Team Freedoms that come up, so it might be easier if people actually put in Freiheit, yes? Which is Freiheit, Team Freiheit, then that comes up instantly.
Yes, teamfreiheit.info is the homepage.
Sorry, say again?
Teamfreiheit.info is the homepage.
That's it. Okay, that's the best way to get it. But as I say, a lot of people only go to Google, so if they put in Freiheit, they're going to get far quicker results than Team Freedom, even though it, of course, means Team Freedom. It's all there. The book's there, your values, your objectives, everything about you, what you're trying to do. Anton, it's been delightful talking to you. Thank you so much for your insights today. It's interesting that it follows on some of your fears, as many other people's fears are for Europe right now. But I just leave you with one final thing, really. What do you think? What would you really say to people who are listening and saying, what can we do? Europe is this big juggernaut that's beginning to ride over us. What do we do?
Now, we are living in a democracy. Even though there are a lot of developments there, but we are now a democracy. And so the politicians, they want to get elected again, so write them an email, you know, take part. No, we as a group, we are not starting everywhere groups. We won't really like have a civil movement, but sign petitions, write your politicians, and go to some demonstration and be active again.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. We'll try and get everybody to do something, if it's only writing to politicians and letting them know our dissatisfaction. Anton, pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
It was my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Kenny.
Thanks, Anton.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.